Hey there, I'm Amanda, a Southern mama with big city sensibilities. I'm the girl that took a daydream and built a profitable virtual assistant business all in the middle of a global pandemic. Now, I work from home alongside some of the biggest bloggers and influencers while running a six-figure online business. I'm taking you along for the ride as we dive into business, marketing, strategy, and real life as a female entrepreneur. I'm all about simple, easy, actionable steps that get real results. This podcast is for the dreamers, the doers, and the go-getters. So let's kick imposter syndrome together and pull back the curtain on how to actually make money online. Get ready as we dig in, do the work, and tackle those big dreams I know you've been dreaming up. This is the Bold Business Podcast. Austin, welcome to the Bold Business Podcast. I am so excited to have you on today. For those of you who may not know Austin, will you introduce yourself? Tell us a little bit about who you are, your business, and how you got started.
Definitely. Well, first of all, thank you so much, Amanda, for having me. I feel like we've been talking about this for a while now, so I'm so glad we finally made it happen. But yes, I am Austin Munhofen and the founder and CEO of Gush & Grow Management, which is a management and talent education company for social influencers or content creators. We use those terms interchangeably all the time. And we also help support brands who are interested in influencer marketing. So we do a little matchmaking when it comes to casting for their campaigns. And of course, being formally managing our creators, we're doing that with them naturally all the time. So we call our creators our strong female leads. So we represent females only who have just a positive and growing influence in the industry, which is how we came up with our name, a gushing audience, a growing influence.
I love that, which is so amazing. And I love that you support females only because, you know, here at the Virtual Assistant Studio, we're all about that female girl power.
Yeah, I love it.
And it's amazing too, because I feel like you really get to see both sides of the industry. For those of you who don't know, Austin and I got connected literally via Instagram, which is so funny. It just goes to show the power of social media. And it's awesome because, you know, us as virtual assistants for influencers, we kind of get like that behind the scenes peek and we really understand what their day-to-day looks like. And then Austin gets the flip side, which is being able to manage their brand collaborations, but also partnering with the brands too, which is so cool. So I feel like she has so much insight and value that we're going to dive into today. Before we do that, Austin has such an amazing story of how she started her business. She had $20 in her bank account, you guys. And with that $20, she was able to take that and build a thriving, profitable business. And I want her to dive into what that looked like because I feel like this story is so inspiring.
I can certainly do that. Just a point of clarification, I did not have $20 only attached to my name. It was something I had set aside, $20, to build a business. I'm like a huge believer in iteration and launching something before it's perfect and getting started before you have all of your ducks in a row, because I think there's so much learning and feedback that happens along the way that just makes you get stronger and stronger. I mean, you and I just talked about this when we were discussing launching courses. But going a little bit further back than that, I really feel like my vocation is supporting other females and helping them win. And I remember I was night nursing about, I don't know, 4 years ago after I had my daughter, and I was scrolling through Instagram. I was a late adopter to Instagram. And I was just so blown away by these women who were building businesses, like actual businesses, and seeing brands who took notice of them. And I thought, you know what? Like, I really want to be a part of this. I think that I have something to offer. I think I have value here for these women to help them grow and realize their vision and their goals. And I just want a piece of this. Like, honestly, that's how it started. So I decided I'm very risk averse. My risk tolerance isn't that high. And so you know, you hear all of these stories about entrepreneurs who would invest tons of money into building their business, whatever that business may be. And sometimes you have to have that capital for certain like software development products for sure. But sometimes you don't. And I just happened to be, you know, in a space where I didn't really need a lot of capital to get going. So I did know, though, that I needed a website. I needed some kind of web presence to get going. And so I was like, okay, got $20. How much is it to like, this was like a personal challenge too. You know, Amanda, like, do you ever have those personal challenges where you're like, I want to do something. I know it's going to have legs, but I also like want to challenge myself to see how scrappy I can be to get it going.
Oh, 100%. And I love that you were scrappy in the beginning, because I feel like that is where the most beautiful businesses are born, is out of that scrappiness.
I totally agree, because when you're scrappy, you're dealing with all of these constraints. And so you have to find creative and strategic ways to navigate them. So I went on Squarespace and I was like, great, Squarespace. I can just set up a site really quickly with Squarespace. I did it in an afternoon. I actually think my in-laws were visiting and I just stepped away for like a minute or so and then came back and they asked me what I did. And I was like, I think I just popped up a website real quick. They were like, what?
Right? They're like, that's an interesting way to spend your afternoon.
I know, right? So anyway, in the beginning, my thought was, I know I want to work with creators. I'm not really sure quite how. And through like a lot of learning, a lot of curiosity, ended up deciding that management was really my sweet spot. I have a background in digital project management. And so a lot of those skills in project management are really transferable when you're talking about management in this industry. And I decided, well, I think that the blog is kind of going to act as a funnel for me to onboard talent, because I'm not sure I can just reach out to someone point blank and be like, hey, do you need a manager? I'm new to this game and would love to represent you. I didn't think that that was the way that I personally wanted to go. Not to say there haven't been cold reach outs, especially for those who I follow and adore. But in the beginning, it was really more of a, I really enjoy what you have to offer on this space. I think other people would as well. Would you like to sit down with me for a 30-minute interview, very similar to this? And I'll capture all of your insights on my blog. You can share it. We can share it with other females who are maybe very interested in what you have to say, maybe even going through the same things, because at this time, the pandemic had just kicked off. And I felt like, you know, everybody was trying to figure out what the heck is going on. People were just trying to learn from each other about how do we navigate this world? How do we live in it?
This story is so interesting because I haven't heard this and I love this so much. And I feel like our audience is going to love this too, especially because you started your business in a time where the world was so uncertain. And so many people started spending so much more time online, and you were able to take that and come really from a place of service, which I think is a very unique approach. And it wasn't, like you said, a cold pitch where it's like, hey, I want to be your manager. It was very much like a friendly handshake, which I think is such a beautiful way and such a testament to you of how you do business too.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I like that idea. Friendly handshake. That's a really nice visual. And yeah, it was that. I remember after I had this one creator who I now represent, after I interviewed her and then published her insights on the blog, and then just that was kind of the opening for, you know, a conversation, a continued conversation. And then she said, yeah, actually, I could probably use help with my brand partnerships. I feel like I'm not doing a great job. I feel like I'm leaving some money on the table. I could do better at this. And I know that I could certainly do better at this if I had some help. And I was like, wow, what a perfect segue. Let me help you with that. So that's how we received our first creator. And then from there, it's either been more intentional reach outs or honestly referrals. You know, if you treat people really well, this industry is pretty small and they talk and they share their contacts and all their references and everything like that. So we have grown our business based on reputation as well, which I'm really, really proud of.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like you're right. Referrals are one of the number one ways that we drive revenue in our business too, on the client services side. And it's amazing because it can feel like when you're an outsider looking in on the world of social media, that there's just so many content creators and everybody's trying to be an influencer or trying to, like, you know, grab their piece of the pie. But in reality, it really is such a new industry. And like you said, everybody kind of knows everybody. And if you do treat them well and, you know, to your point, come from a place of service and really, like, how can I help support you? I feel like that goes so much further than, you know, trying to land in people's inboxes or in their DMs or, you know, get in front of the right people, because it's so much more personable.
Yeah, definitely.
And too, I think, you know, I know personally, like, if I'm looking for somebody, I would trust a recommendation from a friend or a colleague or somebody I've met who has also worked with that person and can give that personal testimony, as opposed to, like, taking a chance on somebody that maybe I haven't, or they reached out to me or something along those lines.
Definitely. It's that know, like, and trust factor. I will say, if that isn't there, I think a great way, and this is something that we've done strategically, is show your client what you can do for them before they become your client. And I know this doesn't always work, but for us, it has in the past, especially if we're supporting a brand who is casting for a specific campaign. And so, of course, we start with our talent to see if there are any great fits on our roster. But then, based on the brand's budget, we can also look out of house. And for those who were interested in repping, who would also be a good fit for this brand, we've cast them for brand campaigns. And that kind of gets that conversation going of, like, wow, I'm not even working with you yet, and you've already landed me a campaign. This is great. So it's just a little taste for what that could look like if you partner together before actually partnering together.
I love that. That's such great advice. And I feel like that's something that can be applicable no matter what industry you're in, is really providing value before you go in for that ask, which is so awesome. That's such a good tip. Okay, so tell me a little bit about how you kind of overcame that fear of getting started in the industry, especially one that I feel like doesn't really have a clear roadmap around what it looks like to build an agency that manages both creators and brands, and how to go about navigating those relationships.
Yeah. Wow. That's a loaded question. I'll break it down and start with the fear part. So I feel kind of weird saying this, Amanda, but I wasn't really afraid to get started. And I think that comes from a couple places. First of all, it's not like I'm never fearful, but I feel fortunate enough that this was not my livelihood, right? So I started this as a passion project, to be perfectly honest. And I just was very curious and wanted to see where it went. And so I wasn't really afraid. And I think, looking back, if I know now, or if I knew then what I know now, is the saying, I'm not sure I would have started it. Not because of fear, but it's a lot of hard work. I mean, there is a little bit of luck, but I feel like when it comes to building a business from the ground up and a profitable business, client services business, it is hard work, a lot of hours, curiosity, passion, and just ruthless prioritization. And so I kind of am glad that I didn't really have many fears at all going in. Otherwise, I think I probably wouldn't have done it.
I love that you said that. It's funny because sometimes I feel that same way about my business, because I feel like, you know, you get started and you're like, oh, this is interesting. This is kind of fun. And then you're like, oh, okay, I can monetize this. This is cool. And then the next thing you know, you have this full-fledged business, and it's, you know, like you said, very demanding, very time consuming, and you really have to learn what are the priorities? And then you start asking yourself those deeper questions, you know, what do I really want my business to be known for? How is that reflective on me? And there's just so much that goes into it. So I think that not having that fear can almost be healthy in a way, because like you said, if you knew all the things you know now, you may have never gotten started.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about the creator industry, because I feel like you have this inside peek, and I know so many people are curious, just from somebody that works in the industry every day, kind of break it down. Like, what does that really look like? As far as like, if somebody was looking to break into the creative industry, wanting to start building relationships, or even just get started in general.
Oh, wow. The creator economy in general is incredibly fascinating. There are so many different parts that make up the creator economy. You have, you know, software platforms for running businesses, selling product, services like management agency. It is, the world is really expansive in the creator space. And I feel like there's like a zillion ways we could go here.
Oh my gosh. But for real, that sounds like, I feel like we could almost do a part one and a part two of this, like,
yeah,
intro into the creative industry. And
I know, right? Like breaking it down in simple steps. I would say for those just getting started, this is an economy. Like there is an established creator economy. Products are being built. Businesses are investing in those products being built. Like it is actually, it has totally transitioned from, you know, oh, mom and dad, I popped up this blog on Tumblr or whatever those, you know, blog sites back in the day were, to as like a side hustle. So people follow along with my travels as I study abroad, you know, that thing, this is a business. This is my platform to actually support my family. This is my livelihood, very much a business. And obviously so many people are recognizing that and creating products and even rolling out new features like Instagram, for example, to support these creators who have built these businesses. I think that Instagram released a statement, late last year, how they were going to be focusing in 2022 on creating features that help creators monetize their platforms. So this is definitely a business now. I think there are more people now, kids in school, if you ask them, I think I read a stat recently that said something like, more kids want to be creators now when they grow up versus astronauts. Like
that is amazing. I love that. Maybe we're going to have like creator dolls at one point, you know, like,
I mean, I'm not going to be surprised when colleges and universities start rolling in some of these classes into like their curriculum. I think that there's certainly opportunity for that. And I mean, we're already starting to see, I know this is kind of getting ahead of myself, but just to piggyback on that note, the lines between celebrity and influencer, celebrity and content creator are getting more and more blurred. I mean, we have creators who started out on, you know, TikTok or some other platform that have become celebrities, that have starred as actresses in movies, that are getting their own reality shows. And even when we're working with brands for casting, there are some brands that are, they'll have a call out for either actors or influencers, like content creators. So these lines are just getting blurred and blurred. Instead of hiring models, now people are hiring creators for their photo shoots. So it's so interesting. There's all that to say, there's like a real possibility here. I think I'm very interested to see the future and where it goes. But kind of like backtracking a little bit and answering your question, if someone's interested, how do they get started? I think it's good to kind of know the space too that you might be entering into. Mm-hmm. You don't need to know it real deep, but just to have an awareness and an understanding, do a little bit of research to know what kind of business you're getting into. I would say if you are interested in becoming a creator, I would not go into it thinking, wow, this is a way I'm going to make a ton of money, because I've kind of seen people make missteps when approaching it from that mindset. It is not a, you know, get rich quick. I don't know. I feel like there are some people out there who do think that. And I just want to say that is not the case. I don't think that's a healthy approach. I think that you should dive in creating something that you're really passionate about. Like, what is that thing or a couple of things that you could talk endlessly about, that it doesn't feel cumbersome to write about or post about frequently? What is that thing that you really, really love and are passionate about? I would start there. And then consistency consistency after you start creating, just, I mean, a lot of reps. It takes a lot of reps to feel comfortable, to get that feedback loop from your audience in terms of what's working, what they're wanting, what they're coming to you for. It really does take consistency. And then once you get that going, once you put out that content that you're passionate about, that people are interested in, and also quality, because you want to continue iterating on the quality to make sure that you're getting better and better and better at your craft, then you'll start connecting either unintentionally or intentionally. But when you can, definitely make connections. Not only, of course, it should go without saying, like, make connections with those who engage with your content, like nurture those conversations, but also don't forget to seek other accounts out as well and engage with their content as well and learn from them as well. I think that's really important.
Yeah, absolutely. There's so much information that you said that I kind of want to unpack a little bit. The first being, one, I love that you kind of broke it down for that person that's wanting to break into the creative industry. I think you're right. I think a lot of times people can think, oh, well, I'll just, you know, throw up a blog or slap a few Instagram posts together, and then suddenly I'm going to have this massive following. And that's not the case. I think it could be easy too, because when we're seeing people online, a lot of times when we do find them, we don't realize that they've been at this for 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, some of them 10 plus even, doing the same thing over and over and over, and learning and growing and gathering that feedback that you talked about from their audience, and then taking that and refining their content and then tweaking as they go. But then also they're having to learn, you know, as these platforms roll out new features, how do they integrate this into their content? What does that look like for them? What platform is going to be best for their type of content? Where is their audience, and like, how can they attract and find them? And all these different layers, I feel like, that go into it that a lot of people don't realize. And I think that's why they get that impression that, you know, they can just throw a few things together and then suddenly they're going to have millions of followers and have like a full-fledged business.
Right.
I think, and it's interesting because I think one thing that I've noticed personally is that a lot of people started out exactly doing what you said. And I think that's why they've been successful, is because they didn't start it out thinking, I'm going to build a business. They started out sharing organically and authentically and just being themselves and sharing about what they were passionate about. And then that evolved into a business over time.
Right, for sure. And I just want to say, Amanda, that I love that you mentioned these very successful content creators that probably a lot of us follow have been doing this for years. I mean, they have years of libraries that they have built that have contributed to their success. It was not an overnight thing at all. And so I'm just really glad that you pointed that out. And you're right, it can look easy to the outsider, but also know that some of these content creators, especially the bigger accounts, have teams working with, like, they actually employ people or contract people and have a team to help them run their business, just like any other business. I mean, I'm part of creator teams, you're part of creator teams, and we're just the behind the scenes people that you don't really see in the finished product, but have quite a bit to do, depending on the product, with the final thing that the audience views, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What was one thing that was like the biggest surprise to you when you kind of like dove into this industry? Because I feel like this is different for everybody.
Biggest surprise. I'm not really sure I had a ton of expectations, to be honest, that would make a surprise come about.
I know for me, I think I always knew how much work went into the back end, but I don't think I knew the scale of it. And I also kind of assumed that there was a lot more planning, I think, that went into content creation. And one thing that I've realized is how fast-paced the industry is and how quickly, like, creators have to churn content out. I think that was very surprising to me. Like, being a type A person, I want to be like, okay, let's plan a month of content out. But that's not always realistic when you're dealing with, you know, moving parts and working through a pandemic where things are selling out and you're partnering with brands and they have certain, you know, goals and objectives that you're trying to support, and then what that looks like from the creator standpoint.
Yeah, you're definitely dealing with timetables and multiple timetables that sometimes align and sometimes don't align. Sometimes they start in great alignment and then something happens and that alignment gets off. And you're right. We certainly get campaign requests from brands that are a little bit last minute, maybe a couple weeks before they want something to go live. But we do also work with brands who do plan out their budget like a quarter ahead or two quarters ahead, which is really nice because then we can get that forecast and insight into what our next quarter will look like and plan that out a little bit more intentionally. Those also happen to be the partnerships that are what I call the most long tail, though, in two ways. Long tail in terms of the moment where you start the conversation to when you actually sign a contract is quite lengthy, like 3 or 4 months long. One of my creators just signed 3 very big contracts for the rest of this year. And it took us about 3 to 4 months to get through defining the scope and the deliverables, the budget, working through all of that, and then getting it through legal, reviewing the contracts, incorporating our feedback. It can take a long, long time. So those fortunately, even though they take a long time, we're able to plan those out a little bit more intentionally than those last minute requests from some other brands.
And I feel like the last minute requests usually come when they find money in the budget at the end of a month or a quarter. And they're like, great, we can invest in influencer marketing, which is so funny.
Right. And good for them. Because honestly, especially depending on the influencer that you're working with, that's probably the best way you can use your marketing dollars. So I recently, Influencer Marketing Hub came out with their 2022 benchmark report, and I was flipping through it the other day. And this year, it's something crazy. At like $16 billion are going to be invested in influencer marketing this year. Billion, like with a B.
Isn't that crazy? And I'm pretty sure their report last year was like half of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It really is just growing quite impressively. And it'll be interesting to see, like I said, what trends start to appear, what new products come out to support creators and their teams. And also, I feel like nearly every industry now has an influencer marketing budget. Maybe not. Some are definitely late to the game, but I have worked with brands across so many different industry verticals that have influencer marketing budget. I mean, from hotels and travel industry to automotive, they have, to insurance companies, they have budgets for working with creators, financial planning institutions. I mean, like any kind of business that has a D2C component has an influencer marketing budget. And if they don't have one, I feel like this year they're going to get one. Like, yes, with everything.
I love it. And I think you're right, because I think a lot of times when people think about influencer marketing, I know just speaking from experience, people's minds automatically go to like the fashion influencer. If, you know, like they're thinking about the girl who's sharing like the cute clothes from Target. But there's so much more to the creator industry than just the fashion influencer. To your point, industries in general are now setting aside, like you said, thousands, millions, into the billions of dollars to be able to invest in this different type of marketing because it is so lucrative. So maybe you can give us some insight and, or even some predictions of kind of where you think that's going to move in the future and what you think that's going to look like. And maybe how you've even seen it shift over the past few years, especially with the pandemic and how that's played a role into things.
Definitely. Well, first of all, I think you're right about the fashion influencer thing. And I just want to say that we do not have one creator on our roster currently whose primary area of influence is fashion.
Isn't that amazing? I love that.
That should tell you something. They are secondary areas of influence for some of our creators, but no primary area of influence for our creators. So there you go. The other thing that I'll say in terms of the differences or evolutions, things that we've seen over the years. Definitely when a new platform comes out, there are some brands who are very quick adopters and want to get creators on that platform with them. And then there are others where we see a little bit of a lag. So for instance, when Clubhouse came out, I don't know if this is the case for a lot of others out there, but for us, we started getting inquiries for rates for some of our creators to go on Clubhouse talks with the brand, which I thought was very interesting. It was definitely a different medium, right? So then fast forward like a year or 2 years after TikTok really had their boom, we're getting a lot more requests for TikTok. And I find that really interesting because TikTok, wasn't it right at the pandemic, TikTok just exploded. Their growth was phenomenal.
But I feel like everybody was very afraid of the platform. They were like, how do we monetize this? Is it safe? Is it going to stick around for a while? What does this mean for other social media platforms?
Yeah, there was definitely a period of time of trying to figure it out. Is this just a place where people watch dance videos or, I don't know, some other things? But now our creators have been receiving requests for TikTok. They've gotten a handle on it. I think it takes some time, both for the brand to figure out how they're going to use a new platform and the creator to have the time to build their libraries, like we talked about earlier, on a new platform to get to the point where the brand is noticing that they have a sizable influence in a new outlet and they're ready to try working in that new outlet themselves.
Mm-hmm, for sure. And it's interesting too, because I feel like we're already seeing a shift just with our client roster in the brand collaborations that they're receiving and the deliverables and what that looks like. And so many of the brands are requesting video or reels or Instagram stories over a static post or a blog post. And it's just interesting to see what they deem as priority and what they feel like they're going to get the best return on investment from.
Definitely. And, you know, speaking of ROI, something that we ask all the brands that we enter into partnership with is, what are your KPIs? What are your key performance indicators? How are you going to define success for working with our creators? Oftentimes it's sales conversions. Oftentimes it's brand awareness. Those are typically what we see in terms of going hand in hand with one another. And, you know, to be perfectly honest, some creators are better at conversions and some are better at raising brand awareness. So if you are a brand listening to this, a piece of advice that I would give you is maybe lean on the manager a little bit. If you're working with an agency or a company, to say like, hey, here's what I'm looking for. Here are my KPIs. Who do you think on your roster would be a great fit? Of course, it's not always like that dialogue is not always the first starting point. It's often a brand who has caught the attention of a specific creator. But even in that case, when you're talking with creators about partnering with them, I would be very open as a brand in terms of what you're looking for. I can't tell you how many times my creators have used that brand feedback as a way to guide them in terms of how they're going to execute on this content. I guess the point that I'm trying to make is that the more upfront a brand can be about what success looks like for working together, the more likely that creator is going to try and make that happen.
Yes, absolutely. I agree. And I see that in the content that they create. And then as someone who is helping them create that content, you know, if we know that a brand is looking for X, Y, and Z, let's say that they, you know, in the obligations, they're looking for 4 frames. These are their goals and objectives. A lot of times we're going to deliver 6 frames because we know, one, that those 6 frames are how we can best deliver the information to our audience. And two, we want to go above and beyond because we want to continue to build those brand relationships long term. We don't want to just work with a brand one time and then never mention them again, because that doesn't build trust with our audience.
You're so right. And really good creators will take the frame minimum into consideration, but they'll go as long as it takes to do right by the brand and to tell a good story in an authentic way.
Exactly. So let's say that, you know, somebody is looking to, maybe they're a little late to the game and they're wanting to start in the influencer marketing space. Maybe they are a brand, whether they're a product-based business or whatever. What advice would you give them to know what influencers are the right fit for them, how to go about finding that partnership, what that would look like, and how they can best spend their money?
Ooh, this is so juicy. I love it. I actually just listened to a talk on stretching your marketing dollars as a brand. And I do, side note, have a download on my website, gushandgrow.com, for brands who are looking to partner with influencers. So this is really a guide for small brands who do have limited budget.
Okay, perfect. We will include that link in the show notes for you guys so that if you're in your cars or chasing your kiddos right now, you can come back to that.
Definitely. So I would say that a couple of things to keep in mind if you have limited budget. One, I think knowing your goals before you go into any kind of partnership is going to be really, really helpful. That way you're putting your goals like the cart before the horse kind of thing. So I think that's important for you to have. I also think knowing that this is a very flexible space. So there are a lot of different levers you can pull. Let's say you reach out to a content creator and their budget, and you would love to work with them. They'd be a great fit for your brand, but they're just out of your price range. Continue the conversation because there are probably a couple of different levers you can pull to meet in the middle that meets your budget and also values their time and creativity. For example, what if you could reduce the net terms for payment? Maybe that would be more attractive for a creator and that would be worth them willing to adjust. What if they could go live without approval? Oftentimes, I see creators who are willing to do a partnership for a reduced rate if they can go live without approval. There's just a lot of back and forth, as you know, when it comes to the whole process of getting content reviewed, approved, go live. So you can be creative here. I would say that, what else do I want to say, Amanda? There's so much to be said here.
There's so much to be said.
There is really so much. Yeah, I'm trying to think, just if you have a limited budget, definitely know what your goals are going into it is certainly important. And then you can get creative with deliverables to meet your budget. Oh, you know, something else, actually, this is a good one. So another tip for brands who have limited budget is see if there's an opportunity to stretch that budget further. Like instead of, for example, planning a photo shoot, which requires a lot of investment, overhead, production time for website imagery, instead of investing those dollars there, could you have the creator you're hiring to give you those assets?
Ooh, that's a good one. I love that. And that kind of goes back to that scrappy mindset of like really thinking outside the box and being creative with how we're doing things within our brand.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay, so I feel like you have this really unique capability. I feel like you're very good at being a people connector. And one of the things I think, whether it's a brand reaching out to an influencer, influencer reaching out to a brand, or even just somebody running an online business who wants to pitch themselves, I feel like that can be very intimidating. Do you have any tips and tricks around building an initial connection in any capacity?
Yes, I definitely agree that starting a conversation, especially when you don't have a lot of clarity around what the thing that you want to pitch is, can be a little intimidating. So I would challenge you to take a step back and figure out what outcomes would you be excited about, and kind of list those as options too. I think in any kind of reach out, you have to be, if you are reaching out, you have to be the one that's bringing ideas to the table, ideas of some kind, because the recipient isn't going to have ideas for a person they've never connected with before necessarily, you know? So how this kind of translates into the pitching world, let's say you do not have a manager and you are a creator and you want to work with a specific brand, first of all, finding an email address is probably your best bet at making that conversation go beyond just your email out in cyberspace. So when you have a specific connection and not necessarily the press at or media at, you know, whatever those generic handles are. But when you have that specific connection, I would share a little bit about who you are, not a long bio. Like really, you do want to be straight and to the point, but share enough about you where they can connect the dots between you and your brand and them and their brand. Links are always incredibly helpful. Like even if you just link to your handle or link to your blog or whatever platform you hope a collaboration will end up on, I think that's very helpful. And in that email, again, be brief, but also be specific. If you're not quite sure how you want to partner with this brand, again, I'm using this creator brand scenario, then you can say, I have some ideas. Would you be open to hearing more? And then that could give you a little bit more time to figure it out. But most of the time, I feel like creators are pretty specific on how they want to partner with a brand, either like on a social collaboration or something else. I like to end, when appropriate, emails with a question mark, because I think that is this something you would be open to discussing? Is more likely to generate a response than let me know what you think! So I like to leave things open with a question. It kind of feels like you're having a conversation, the ball's in their court, you hope to hear back from them. And I will say that brands just like us get really busy. The emails pile up. And so looping back, you know, in a couple of days or a week or whatever time you feel is appropriate, is actually quite welcome on their side. So just because you send one email and don't get a response, don't stop there. I wouldn't, you know, consistently email for like a year, but I think one email reminder is totally appropriate. And then if you still don't hear back, there have been scenarios where I'll follow up with a brand maybe a quarter later with an update like, hey, just want to let you know we've actually had this creator has, you know, grown since the last time I reached out, or some other life event has happened that makes this partnership even more perfect. Would you be open to discussing? That's always a great way to do that too.
Yeah, I love that, because sometimes, well, one, that email could have totally gotten lost or buried or, you know, pushed over to the promotions folder. And two, it may have just been a scenario where that person opened that email, they read it, and they're like, okay, this is, we're not doing this now. Like, we don't have the budget, or this isn't the right timing or whatever. But following up again, you know, 1, 2, 3 months down the road with, like you said, even more value and giving them that substantial, this is why it would be a good fit, would you be interested? Can sometimes be the perfect timing where they're like, oh yes, actually we do have room in our budget, and actually we are looking to host somebody for X, Y, and Z or whatever that may be. So remembering too, like just because it's a no doesn't mean it's a no forever. It might just be like a no, not right now.
Exactly. I love that. And I say that all the time too. And there have definitely been partnerships that we've gone live with that were a no at one point. So it doesn't, just like you said, it doesn't mean no forever. Another thing I did want to mention is if you are a creator and you're pitching yourself to a brand, if that's the scenario, in addition to linking, in addition to having some kind of idea as to how you want to work with this brand, if you have any data or stats that would be valuable for them, like maybe that's a certain number of sales conversions you can research and like to know it that you've driven for the brand, any kind of data, or maybe it's they're in the same space as another brand that you do have data on, or something, I think that also goes a long way. There are some brands that we work with that first like to see creators convert before they enter into a partnership with them. So they'll gift product or do product, what's called product seeding first. And then after the creator goes live organically with the product that they've been gifted and have some stats attached to that, then the brand is like, okay, now I see that this could be, you know, more of a paid partnership. Not all brands work like that, but there are certainly a few that we've come across that definitely like to see metrics before they enter into a paid sponsorship agreement.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of like that social proof to be able to say, I am a good fit. This does resonate with my audience. This is going to be worth the money, because at the end of the day, you have to think, you know, it's not just all about, okay, I want to get paid for this collaboration. It's really about how can this partnership be mutually beneficial, and what is that going to look like long term, and how can they support each other?
Exactly. And that's what it's all about too. And that's so top of mind for us. I'm glad you said that is mutually beneficial, because we are thinking in every scenario of the brand success and the creator's success, and they're totally intertwined. So I'm glad that you mentioned that.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. So for somebody that isn't quite ready for a brand manager themselves and is really looking to DIY pitching, getting connected with brands, starting with collaborations, and they want to go about it the right way, what advice can you give them? And do you have any tools or resources that might help them get started?
Yes, I am so glad you asked that. We actually have a course. It's called How to Land Paid Brand Collaborations, and how to land them with authenticity, integrity, confidence, and do it effectively. So all the things that you're saying. This course was created for those who either they don't have a brand manager, like you said, and they're trying to level up themselves, or for a member of their team who they would like to kind of level up in this capacity as well. For example, let's say there is a virtual assistant that they would also like for them to take a course to just be a little bit more knowledgeable in how to navigate some of these inquiry emails. Perhaps this course would be a great fit for them.
Yes, I love that. And I feel like it's so valuable, because I have so many people that ask, is this something that you do, or is this a service that you offer? And I think there's a real niche, whether that person is an influencer looking to do this themselves, or on the flip side, like you said, a member of their team looking to be able to do this, because a lot of people will want to keep this in-house or have their right-hand person do this on their behalf. And to your point, really understanding like the ins and outs of what this looks like and how to do it effectively is so key, because there's definitely a right and wrong way to go about this.
There is. You're absolutely right. And so this course, the purpose is to help you not make those mistakes, to be ready, not make those mistakes. So we have everything from how to pitch, including templates, because I think that templates are, if you can do almost like a plug and play, go for it. Like that'll save you a ton of time. So we've actually created some templates that will save you hours and hours of time that you can just put in your information and use that. Setting rates and negotiating with integrity. This can be also where a lot of mess ups can happen. So we lay out like what that looks like. How do you determine your rates? How do you negotiate with the brand in a way that feels like you're doing it from a good place? It's not coming across as self-indulgent, but really authentic and genuine and just really earnest. There are a lot of different modules in this course, but something else that's really valuable is contracts. So contracts is a thing that not a lot of people like to touch. They're boring. Legal can be scary. They're not quite sure what they're signing. And a lot of people sign without actually reading or really trying to understand. It takes time to do that. And especially if you want legal to review, that can often take a lot of budget. So while I'm no means, you know, saying that I'm a legal advisor in any capacity, this does teach you what does whitelisting mean? What does exclusivity mean? Net terms? What do those things actually mean? What should I be charging for? What should I not be charging for? And how do I navigate that and some other kind of tricky situations that can pop up with contracts? So I think that's incredibly valuable and not something that I see a lot of people out there offer.
I couldn't agree more. And I'm so glad you brought this up, because like you said, contracts are one of those kind of like boring but also scary things at the same time that people just avoid. Like they put it in the back of their closet and pretend like it's not there. And it's so vitally important. And a lot of the questions that I see inside of different Facebook groups and communities that I'm part of center around all of those things that you just mentioned. What is whitelisting? What does exclusivity mean? This brand is asking for X, Y, and Z. What do I do in this scenario? So I love that you touch on that in the course and really give people a roadmap as to how to navigate that, because I think fully understanding what those things are the first step, but then knowing what to do with that information is even more important.
Absolutely. I really couldn't agree more. And I think some people actually have hesitation when they receive a contract. Maybe creators who just aren't really comfortable with the contract don't even know how to respond and say, hey, what does this mean? Can you help me understand this? Can we take this out? Actually, I charge for this deliverable. It can be really uncomfortable, but it doesn't have to be.
Right. Exactly. And I think, you know, like you said, it goes back to it being mutually beneficial, and how do we make this work for both parties where everybody's winning together?
100%.
Oh, well, I am so excited. I can't wait for the course. Where can everybody find more information about you, about Gush and Grow, about the course if they're interested in taking it?
Head to our website, gushandgrow.com. Like you said, there's more about us, who we represent, what brands we've worked with, free resources for creators and brands, a blog, and also the way to sign up for our course, how to pitch and land paid brand collaborations.
Oh my gosh, so exciting. Well, I will definitely let all of you guys know once that course goes live. In the meantime, head to her website so that you guys can get on the wait list and go give her a follow on Instagram. She gives so much value, and it's also so fun just to see kind of a behind the scenes peek at the influencer industry. Austin, thank you so much. This has been so fun.
It has. Thank you so much for having me. We need to do this again.
We definitely will. Don't worry. I'm over here doing a little happy dance because you just finished another episode of the Bold Business Podcast. Is it just me, or was that filled to the brim with juicy goodness? If you're anything like me and are wanting even more business, marketing, and strategy tips coupled with real life, follow along with us over on Instagram at the Bold Business Podcast. And be sure to check out the show notes for any free resources, links mentioned, or coupon codes and more. And if you loved this episode, will you do me a favor and go ahead and tap that subscribe button and leave us a review? Until next time, and remember, let's be bold together.